Take a network break. And this is a quick show to wrap up 2019. Wish you happy holidays and say happy new year. We've got some FU to wrap up 2019, plus a couple of last minute news items. And Greg, we wanted to do the show because essentially on the last show, we forgot to say this was the last show.
Apparently, we forgot to tell you it's the last show last week. So this is the last show to let you know that this is the last show of 2019.
An extra show to tell you it's the last show because we forgot to do it on the last show. So this is the last show.
That's right. And I am so ready for this. I must say that I have had to drag myself to the microphone to do this today. I'm really tired. It's been a very long year somehow. It's been a hell of a journey for all of us. I think that we've seen so much change and so much remained the same, and sort of, which is a frustration always. But I am so ready for this to be the last show of 2019.
All right, well, let's knock it out of the park. And just a reminder that you can join our Slack community. It's free. We've got lively discussions going on there about tech, about troubleshooting, shop talk, and just having some fun. If you want to get on there, it's free. Drop us an email at packetpushers@gmail.com. Put Slack invite in the header. Let us know which email you want to associate with your account, and we'll get you started.
Send us your LinkedIn profile as well. We do filter a little bit. We don't want to see a bunch of vendor shills drop in, you know,
right,
taking every opportunity to shove their products down your throat. You will be filtered out. It's meant to be a useful.
We try to keep it a marketing-free zone.
Obviously, if people do misbehave, you may be filtered out. But, you know, it's a good place to come and chat. A lot of people use it to ask questions about, you know, things that are going wrong in the network or get ideas about products. So, you know, we'd love to see more of that and more people sharing amongst themselves. And it's a closed forum, Chatham House rules. Talk amongst yourself, but we don't talk about what happened there outside of the group.
Right. Yes, exactly. And also, if you aren't already subscribed, check out our Human Infrastructure newsletter. It's a weekly email with a regular feature article by the Packet Pushers and special guests. Plus, we round up a bunch of interesting links from our feeds, do IT commentary, and have a few laughs. Go to packetpushers.net/newsletter, where you can sign up there and see the more than 100 back issues of the newsletter that already exist. For either Slack or him, we don't save your emails. We don't share them with anyone. There's already too much spam in the world. We aren't going to add any more, so we won't sell you out.
And it's been going for quite a long time, 3 or 4 years now. And we'd love to see some more people join up there and give us some hints. If you've got something that you think should be in there, send us your links, send us your thoughts, and maybe we'll include them.
That's right. And also, we do have guest writers in Human Infrastructure that we pay for. So if you've got something on your chest that you think you want to get out, let us know. We can also take it from there.
It'll give it your carton of cartons of beer, won't it? You won't be going around in a Ferrari.
<It's not>
Free beer money.
It's not a big payout, but
yeah, that's right, yeah.
But if you've always wanted to be paid for writing, this is your opportunity. Mm-hmm. All right, Greg, let's start with a little FU, the follow-up. First comes from, we've been talking a lot about DOH, that is DNS over HTTPS. This person says, I think you guys are missing the point on why the ISPs are so upset about DOH. It's not that they have to upgrade their DNS servers to support it. It's that Firefox and Google are defining the DNS in the browser, encrypting and sending traffic to Cloudflare, and Google's DNS bypassing the ISP's DNS. I feel like that's sort of been our main point around this.
That is actually a desirable thing, because giving the ISPs your DNS is not a problem in itself. It's that anybody can intercept that DNS query in flight. And quite often when you go to, say, like a wireless network where you go to like a cafe and you connect up, all of that data is collected and you are personally identified, and that personally identifiable information and the data about what you surfed is then sold off. Now, there
right,
are
the whole
two
issue of the DOH privacy is that it's protecting your privacy from the ISPs, which is of course why the ISPs don't like it, because they can harvest and mine that data.
Yes, and that's true that the DNS providers can still harvest and mine that data. That is not, that has always been the issue, and that is not a problem that can be fixed right now. Right. But what we can solve is the problem of ISPs collecting that data, third parties collecting it transparently off the wire using various methods, and then using that data to sell it. So Facebook, for example, likes to capture DNS traffic and to know where people are going. Facebook likes to actually track where users are going, even if they're not using Facebook, even if they're not logged into Facebook, even if they delete the app off Facebook. The, you know, the websites with all the little Facebook buttons, like, you know, collect this?
Yes.
Those are actually trackers.
That's right.
And they see you landing on that site. And Facebook, when that button comes down, your computer responds and says with a cookie, and then they can track that cookie. And that data is actually being exploited by vendors. If you're vendor A and you want to know if your product, if your company is actually, say, genuinely looking at vendor B, they will go and buy your browser history from your employees and then use that to analyze just how serious you were about buying vendor B. Like if you're not surfing that website at all and not looking at those products, you can probably ignore it because there's actually no genuine engagement there. So those are the sorts of things that DNS is trying to – this is a step down this path. I think the second thing to think about here is that DNS should have always been encrypted, and it's always been agreed that the communication between the client and the DNS server should have been encrypted right the way back in, you know, the 1980s or whenever it started. It's just that doing encryption at that time wasn't possible. And up until now, people have refused to do it, and hence DNSSEC. DNSSEC is the real security that we needed, but nobody wanted to implement that. The best we can manage is DNS over HTTPS. Yes, it breaks things. Yes, it breaks things that, you know, there was a very good 2 hours of podcasting on Russ White's The Hedge, where Jeff Houston and Russ White go over these issues. If you really, really, really want to go into the details, go over there and do that.
I will drop a link into the show notes so that you can find it. And thank you for the follow-up. Another one from another listener says, I was listening to a recent podcast on real-life segment routing. That was a heavy networking episode that Ethan did. Very informative and a technology I'm quite interested in. I find MPLS as an initialism very clunky and jittery. Is it too late to change it to Shrimples?
There is an advertising campaign here in the UK which has these little... what Americans would call hound dogs. They sort of pop up and they have this high-pitched voice talking like da-da-da-da-da, and it's advertising some product or another. And they tipple around and goes, and if you go to our things, and we'll do it, simples. And so that's the joke.
I see. Okay. So there's a lot of – not only are we integrating SRMPLS, but there's also some British television commercial all munging here together.
I think he makes a good point. SRMPLS is very uncomfortable if you're standing in a meeting talking at a whiteboard and going bang, bang, bang. That's why people call it mipples. MPLS is often called mipples, and having SRMPLS as shrimples makes sense to me. I'm all for that.
I don't
– Well, more importantly, correctly, it would be shrimples. Shrimples.
Because the networking department is never finds it hard to be taken seriously, so throwing shrimples around is going to help, right?
Throwing acronyms like SRMPLS around is actually going to be, you know, or even SR or whatever. But hey, whatever.
Okay, well, for us, shrimples it is. Go forth and propagate.
That's exactly, I think we're in on that. We should have a survey for that.
One more FU. This is for all of us. It says, I hear Greg complain a lot about IT leadership. I think it's largely justified. So here's a question. Is good leadership hard to find? Do we IT professionals just have unrealistic expectations about leaders, a bit of both, or something else entirely? Thoughts?
I think it's largely justified. like a long-time listener, first-time coiler from Boise, Idaho, wherever that is. I mean, what? Let's just take it rabbit. Why is it that Americans always identify themselves by where they're from? What does Boise, Idaho even mean? It sounds like a type of shovel.
No, it's a city within a state. Okay. Idaho is the state, yes.
Never heard of it. I don't know.
Why would you have?
Yeah, it's whenever you talk to somebody who's from Mickey, you go, I'm from, and I'm going like, well, I don't know what that means. It's like, you know, if I say I'm from Mount Isa in Queensland, you'd just be looking at me going like, what?
Anyway, well, it would mean something to somebody from Australia. It's it's shorthand for saying, I wonder what... religious or political beliefs or sort of general worldview you may have that I can divine based on where you're from, I think it's just sort of shorthand for, let me try to contextualize you a little bit in the first 20 seconds in which I'm meeting you.
I don't want to be judged, Drew. People judge too much.
Too late.
You don't judge me because of where I live. People need to evaluate me for who I am, not for who they think I should be.
Right. Anyway. Okay.
I think IT leadership is a real problem. I was actually having this discussion with an old colleague who used to be a high-flying manager, and he said in his organization they would promote the bad engineers into management to get them out of the engineering team, and then they'd be bad managers. That's one way to do
what
it.
What a strategy.
Yeah. Sometimes people hire managers who have no technology skills, and those people often don't understand what they're managing. It was very popular a few years ago for MBA graduates. They were told that the fastest way to get to the board or to get onto the executive was to go and be a CIO at an organization, and they would come in and be the head of the infrastructure team. They had no idea what they were doing, but if you're doing an MBA, you're just taught that business is business and managing is managing, and it doesn't really matter what the thing is you're managing. Of course, that might work well for sugary water, but it doesn't work so well for complex manufacturing or complex infrastructure problems. You actually have to have a sense of what it is you're managing. You can't just rely on the people. Anyway, I think generally most businesses have underestimated the value of management. They've been wiping out middle management for 20 years. McKinsey and the other big consultancies made a big deal out of, if you just got rid of the managers, you'd make more money. And then the managers go, they say, well, I can't have this many staff, so we need to get rid of the staff as well. And you get a short-term gain, and then there's a long-term loss. But then McKinsey's got their money and they're gone, and the managers who are left are still making their money, so they don't do anything about it. It's kind of one of those tragedy of the commons things.
I'd say the tragedy of the consulting more than the commons, but yes, I take your point.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where the sort of global capitalism shift to the shareholder is the only value proposition that has value. You know, the only thing is to deliver short-term value at right now, which conveniently lowers the long-term value of having management training programs. Like in the old days, managers, when you were promoted to manager, you would often get sent off for weeks of training on how to be a manager, how to handle the payroll system, what you needed to know about HR, how to, you know, what to do with direct reports. And now it's, congratulations, you're a manager. You all of a sudden know all you ever needed to know about HR, being a manager, direct reports, one-to-ones. And you're like, and you see this on Twitter all the time, and managers are saying, how do I learn to be a manager? And the answer was, in the old days, you would go off to manager school when you were selected, and you'd be taught to be normal and to treat people with respect and not be an idiot and so forth. For the time being, there doesn't appear to be any shift away from the shareholder value is king. And if that happens, I think we'll see a return to practical management, where good managers are trained and encouraged and bad managers are removed because the value of those people is recognized.
Speaking of human infrastructure newsletter, I wrote an article about this for that newsletter. I'll drop a link into it in the show notes. I did a little research. Back in 2009, Google actually did a study of its managers to find out, are these managers actually having an effect, good or bad, on the engineers underneath them? Because the engineers were saying, we don't need management. We can do this ourselves. Get rid of the management. And they found out that they could actually measure the performance of managers based on the productivity of the engineers under them. And there were good managers who did have a positive impact on the folks under them, improving productivity. The thing is, though, that what made an effective manager, there were certain characteristics, and those characteristics can be trained and taught. So it is, leadership is a skill set. And so if you're going to throw somebody into a leadership position or a management position, you should train them, because dealing with people can be complex, difficult, and hard, and they need skill sets to do it. So if you're just nominating people and throwing them up the ladder because of whatever reason without any help or support, then yeah, you're going to get bad results.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
All right.
Welcome to modern capitalism.
Yeah, that's right.
Competency
efficiency
is optional.
At all costs.
Efficiency at any cost, and competency is optional. Just money. Just give me the money.
Yeah. All right, our last FU for the day. Last week, Greg started fooling around with a new soundboard app to drop a few sound effects into the show. There it is.
You know how I've wanted to do this for ever since Packet Pusher started?
For years.
Yes, yes.
We did get one comment. The quote is, oh my God, stop with the sound effects. If I wanted a morning zoo program, I would tune into my local expletive radio station.
So here's your chance. One no does not make a whole barrel of yeses. So here's your chance to write in and tell me that, Greg. Too much.
It's just poking the bear.
Poking the bear. I don't know. I think I said to Drew, you've got to tell me if I'm doing them too often. The idea is to do a couple of them during a show, maybe when it's warranted. Maybe they get edited out. But if you think they are truly grossly offensive, this is your chance. Hit us up, packetpushers@gmail.com, or head on over to our website, packetpushers.net/FU, and tell us what you think about the sound effects, if they bug you or if they don't. We need to know both sides of the argument.
Yeah, we'd like to take the temperature on this. And for any other follow-up, comments, queries, questions, feedback, packetpushers.net/FU. And thank you for being so responsive. This is something we just sort of kicked off on the last half or the last quarter of this year, and it feels like it's been good. We've gotten a lot of feedback. We appreciate it. So keep it coming in 2020.
We'll actually be splitting the FU out from the network break going forward. We're actually finding that the FU is making the network break shows too long. So we're going to be running a couple of network breaks, and then we'll run a show which is just FU. It'll be a special show where we gather up all the FU into an FU-only show.
Oh, boy. It's going to be a heck of a show.
That'll be one. So you'll see, it'll be a change, just so that the show doesn't get too long and too unwieldy for you to listen to.
All right, we did promise a little news, and there are a few stories we want to cover before we close out for the year. First, Google has set a goal to be the top two cloud player by 2023. This is according to news reports. The company, which recently appointed former Oracle exec Thomas Kurian to run the cloud business, wants to be number one or number two in cloud market share in the next 3 years.
This is really awkward. This is the sort of discussion that any reasonable company has from time to time. We're not number one or number two. Do we get out of it? Do we stay in it? Do we invest? Do we uninvest? This is not an unreasonable discussion. Google Cloud certainly struggles. And in my opinion, this is the challenge with Google Cloud is that it's a pig versus the chicken argument. You know, when the chicken says, I'm contributing eggs to the farmer's breakfast, I'm more important for you. And the pig says, yeah, that's easy for you, but I'm all in because I'm giving the bacon. Right?
Right.
And Google Cloud is not all in. Google's not business does not live or die by the strength of that. Whereas AWS and Azure is very much businesses in which they're all in. And the sense of desperation and the sense of purpose that comes out of that and the sense of commitment shows in that, you know, Amazon needs AWS, particularly it needs the AWS profits to fund the rest of its business. The desperation that Microsoft has around Azure is the way out of the Windows doldrums. You know, they lost relevance, they missed mobile, they failed to make any of their apps as successful as Oracle. AWS is eating all that legacy at lunch anyway, or Google. So Azure is definitely the way out for Microsoft, whereas Google right. Cloud's like, no, our main business is privacy surveillance, where we steal as much of your personal information as possible and then attach ads to it. And everything else is kind of like an accessory. So I think there's a real issue there with that. And Google is not all in. So yeah, that's probably the biggest thing. There are other things.
There are. And a little context, there's a website called The Information, which sort of frantically covers the Silicon Valley set. And they put out a story quoting some unnamed insider saying that Google had very briefly discussed whether they should even be in the cloud business. And then a couple of mainstream outlets, in particular CNBC, ran with that and said, Google thought about getting out of cloud. And so a lot of kerfuffle went up about that. But part of the issue, I think, for Google is that they do have a reputation of launching products with great fanfare and then without any ceremony, killing them off later because they just don't take. And so you could expect people reading that story to think, yep, that sounds like Google. They'll get into a business sector and then just drop out if it doesn't work out.
And when they walk away from products that they've developed, they do that for no reason. They don't explain themselves. There's no hint that it's coming. The product is fully developed right the way up until it train smashes into the buffers at the end of the railway line. And so people are right to be nervous. I mean, look at, you know, Google Reader, even 8 years later, everybody still complains that Google Reader was killed. People still, the only reason that we think that they wanted to kill that off was because they wanted people to do more searching, so they got more signals about what you were looking at, and that would display more ads and also would display better ads because they knew what you were searching for, whereas RSS was jumping out of the ecosystem. That's right. Still only speculation. Google never said anything. And there's a whole webpage called Killed by Google, which lists out the dozens and dozens of products, very useful, inherently valuable products that would have been were profitable and, you know, treasured by the people who used them, but then killed for no apparent reason. So it is not, it certainly plays into a narrative that Google might just stop doing cloud. And it's easy to believe that this is not just an idle chit chat or a reasonable reevaluation. It's that, you know, maybe they could.
It is. And I think for Google, the key issue is they need to find a value proposition. Why? What makes Google special? Why would I want to go there? I feel like AWS, they're the Velocity Cloud. They spin out new features and capabilities. They're pushing the envelope of what you can do in cloud. Azure's for the enterprise. You know, they've already got a core of developers who are experienced building backend systems on Windows. Microsoft is good at selling to the enterprise, and Azure also ties in nicely with Office 365, et cetera. So there's sort of their market approach. I don't know what Google is doing, where value proposition is, how it differentiates, why you would want Google Cloud. They need to answer that question if they're going to be serious about being one or two.
Yeah, I do. And I think this sort of thing is not helpful at all. And it would be very uncomfortable for Google right now to be facing that. But the flip side of this is they probably just don't care, because as long as it doesn't matter, doesn't affect their ad business, no one gives a rat's. The senior executive at Google probably so busy worrying about how to display the next ad that it really don't care if Google Cloud's got having a bad day in the press.
Right. Money from search insulates them from missteps in the cloud, and that can be a problem.
And I generally think that Google Cloud is better technically. What it does well. And faster and cheaper than just about all the other clouds. The challenge is that without that focus, it may never have the actual features or the marketing or the sales or the reach into the enterprise that it needs. already Google Anthos was the right thing to put on-prem Kubernetes there, but already that's being gazumped by AWS Outposts and Wavelength and, you know, all of that stuff. And then Azure with Azure, relaunch of Azure Stack with containers. You know, Google had an advantage and it's already squandered it.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see what they can do with Thomas Kurian. Bringing him in from Oracle to me is a signal that Google may want to chase the enterprise customer because that seems like Thomas Kurian's skill set. So we'll see what they do in terms of sales and messaging and finding that way to...
I don't think bringing in executives from Oracle is the right thing. I think they need to go somewhere which is... like Oracle's relationship with the enterprise is pretty hostile.
It's abusive, yeah.
You don't hear customers say, I love my Oracle. They say, I'm being abused by Oracle, but I can't go anywhere else sort of thing.
Right.
So I'm not 100% sure that claiming that your top honcho is the Oracle and he really understands the enterprise, I don't actually think that's a total positive. No matter how good or how nice the particular person is, I just think that they've got to stop saying he's from Oracle. That suddenly makes him good.
Yeah, I'm not saying necessarily it makes him good, but to me it's a signal that Google's thinking what they're thinking is we want to go after the enterprise, so we'll bring in someone who has experience actually talking to enterprises, which I don't know that Google really does.
Yeah.
Whether he's the right person, that's also up for debate. But to me, it's a signal that this is where they're going.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
All right, moving on. Cisco has announced that it's going to acquire Exablaze. This is an Australian company that specializes in layer one switches and FPGAs for low latency networking and use cases like high frequency trading. And this, just a note, Arista also acquired a similar company called Metamako for exactly the same reasons back in 2018.
This company uses FPGAs to do switching. It's a really specialized technology. They don't actually do layer two switching as such. They're not doing cut-through switching, which is what most people would know for low latency. This is actually called L1 forwarding. They're actually doing cable to cable. So you're measuring the forwarding rate down in the sub 10 nanosecond range. That is very important for people who do super low latency networking, in other words, HFT type markets. And then they also apply some specific software features that are related to timing. So you actually use timing signals and things like that to actually log when the packet was received. So if you're looking at your HFT and you're a trading platform, you want to know if you got everything that you needed, if that makes sense.
Yes. So, yeah, timing is very critical for high frequency trading.
In terms of the bigger picture, I think what we're seeing with the announcement, the Silicon announcement last week, and then this next week, I think what we're seeing is a return to the Cisco of old, where Cisco has one of everything. Why would they do that? And that's because I think Cisco's been turning away from the enterprise market. What we're seeing here is a signal that it might be coming back to the enterprise market because its exercises out in the fields of new business around, you know, AppDynamics and Jasper and trying to boost this part of, you know, play with this new technology or get into the public cloud and own the networking in the public cloud have all met with modest success or failure at some level. And Cisco's decided to return to the market. And the way that it does that is it gets one product in every space so the customers never need to look outside. And if Cisco's got an L1 switching answer for this highly specialized networking, then internally the customer stops looking for other people. Because once they look outside of the Cisco sales cycle, they might discover new products are actually better. It's better outside than dealing with Cisco all the time. But when Cisco's got one of everything, the companies just sort of end up sort of with a hostage syndrome of, well, we just buy everything from Cisco because it's easier sort of thing.
Obviously, high frequency trading is the key driver here, but they're also positioning this for use like AI and ML or out at the edge where if you're working with IoT or say connected cars that where that low latency is absolutely critical, then this is a potential use cases where they could expand as well.
The latest news cycle is turning back to having one of everything like they did in the old days. And that means customers don't have to go outside of Cisco to find everything. And it also, I think Arista's had a lot of success with low latency switching in the data center or better, you know, customers have bought Arista instead of Cisco because Arista had products that they wanted or there was something there that suited the way they wanted to work. You know, you could make up your own interpretation of how that goes.
Right.
Yeah. And see how it works out. But yeah.
Yeah. My assumption also, this market size is very small, but potentially very lucrative given the kinds of organizations they're dealing with, large financial services firms.
Yes. Yeah. Or a specialist switching at this sort of arc. I think Cisco has to show its expertise here so that customers don't turn away and find other products that they want to buy, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Our last story before we let you go, some of the biggest names in consumer surveillance, home automation, have formed a working group to develop new standards for connecting smart home products. So Apple, Amazon, and Google are the marquee names, but the working group also includes the Zigbee Alliance. And that Zigbee Alliance has members like Samsung and IKEA. The working group is aiming to develop a standard based on the internet protocol with an eye toward toward compatibility and security.
Home networking, we've never talked about it because it's just not us. You know what I mean? Like, it's also been very messy. I've always read the market as being a bitch fight between Amazon, Apple, and Google, and each of them was attempting to dominate the market. So Apple was trying to get its HomeKit strategy up, and it had its IP, networking over IP using multicast DNS in the home and the HomeKit thing, and it wanted it to be attached to a piece of silicon, and you had to license it from Apple and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And Amazon came along with Alexa and just said, here's a bit of software, shove it in anything you want.
That's right.
Make it compatible. You know, we don't care. Don't care how bad it is. We don't care how stupid it is. We don't care if it's secure. Screw users. Kill them. You know, just give them. Just
get it in there fast as you can.
Just get it in there. Put our brand name all over it. You know, we don't care. So I thought that was an interesting way to go. And then Google, of course, has done something similar. They've been convincing people to put its...
They have two protocols, Weave and Thread, which came from Nest.
I think eventually they've sort of decided that no one's going to win here. Nobody's going to dominate, and they have to cooperate and interoperate. There was a time there when we were looking at hubs for the house. Remember, there was a bunch of startups attempting to try and take Zigbee and Apple's HomeKit and Google's and then you'd have them, and then it would bridge between them all. But all those startups have failed for whatever reason. I guess there was just a reason, you know, just shows that it doesn't work. So now, well done, consumers. This is what you actually want. You want all of these standards to be interoperable. You want some common level of basic functionality. Nobody wants a repeat of the MP3 patents from 15 years ago where Fraunhofer suddenly popped up and said, oh, we've actually got patents on those. And everybody had to start paying for MP3 licenses all of a sudden, which was pretty dire, but that was, you know, was what it was.
So yeah, I think this is an interesting bit of co-opetition because obviously Amazon, Apple, and Google want to own that smart home speaker as sort of the central locus of everything else that your smart home is going to connect to. So they're battling on that front, but it's stupid to fight over the connectivity layer. That should be as easy as possible for consumers and as easy as possible for third-party manufacturers and software developers to tag into that, because that means more devices will connect to your device, and that's what they want. So they've decided to call a truce on the connectivity front. They'll battle it out in other areas.
That's what I think so.
Yep.
Be interesting to see how it plans out. I think it's interesting the Zigbee Alliance Board, although all of the press coverage seems to talk about Apple, Amazon, and Google, the reality is that IKEA, Legrand, NXP Semiconductor, Samsung SmartThings, Schneider Electric, Philips Lighting, which is now called Signify or Hue, Silicon Lag, Somfy, Willian are also on board to join the working group and contribute to the project. So it's not just the three big players contributing here. I think really this might have been... an alliance of other people going to these big companies and saying, look, we're not going to keep writing for Apple and Amazon and Google. We're only going to do this once. We have to pick it. And you guys either have to work it out or you get nothing, you know, and you know, or you're going to have to pay us to write. So if you know, if you want us to support Apple HomeKit, you're going to have to pay us to write for your API or something like that. You know, I could imagine something like that happening is what I'm trying to say.
That's an interesting take that the third party side would come to them and say, get your act together because this is a pain in the butt for us. And if you want stuff that's going to connect to your systems, make it easy for us. That does make sense that they would raise that issue.
And, you know, Apple's not going to make door locks and window opening detections and, you know, all the stuff that goes on with that. And these other companies like IKEA is making furniture with smart speakers built in and wireless charging points.
Right. Yeah. So, and who knows what else, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. So I just felt this was something that needed to, should have happened a long time ago. And I've always sort of wondering, like I've been holding off buying door locks and some of the other smart home stuff because it didn't make any sense to get involved with it, right? Mm-hmm. Because nothing worked. And I chose to be with HomeKit. That severely restricted my choices of technology that I could and couldn't have. Well, okay, that's it. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. All right, a move toward standardization. We'll keep an eye on this and see how it plays out. Mm. That's our final news story for the year, and this is our final network break for 2019. Greg, any last thoughts while we wrap up?
It's been a long year. I'm looking back over all of the things we did last year. So instead of doing predictions, I'm going to go through all of the network break shows we did in 2019 and pick up on the key points. So we had a lot of themes like security as a feature, Cisco going into new markets, abandoning the enterprise, Juniper coming out of service provider, coming into enterprise. And I'm going to go back and read all the show notes from last year and then come back in the first episode of Network Break and say, these are the things we saw last year. Did we get them right?
Sort of okay, like interesting.
So just try and pick one or two things out of each month so the show won't be too long and sort of have a retrospective. So instead of making predictions and looking forward like everybody else, which is pretty stupid because you can only tell where you're going to go by looking at where you've come from. And so that's the approach that I wanted to take. So we'll have that sometime in the new year. Of course, we might go with the news. If there's enough news, we'll do that. But probably sometime in the network breaks in January, we'll go over, you know, the year in review kind of thing. But really, it's about looking at what we said last year and seeing where it comes next year.
Excellent. That's a good project we can work on. All right. Well, I'm Drew Conrad Murray. I'm on Twitter, Drew_CM, blogging at packetpushers.net. Thank you to all of you for giving us your time, your feedback, your encouragement, your gentle corrections. We really appreciate it. It's been a great 2019, and we're looking forward to next year. Have a happy holiday and a good new year.
And thank you very much for being with us. As always, please give us your feedback. It helps us to make sure that we're giving you what you want to hear. And we've got the website set up, you know, packetpushers.net/FU. It's there to be able to you know, tell us where we want to go. We are trying to meet you and your professional development, help you to be a better career engineer by giving you some business awareness and some industry awareness. That's the purpose of the network break. And of course, our other channels like Heavy Networking, IPv6 Buzz, you know, Day 2 Cloud are looking deeper into the technology side. But this is our news because that's an important part about design and strategy in the industry. And hopefully we're meeting that goal. And if we aren't, please do let us know. And then so we can change course because things change and so should we. Thanks very much for being with us in 2019.
See you next year.